Welcome to the podcast, Bringing Soul to the Workplace. I'm Dr. Neil Lundgren. Recently, I came across a wise saying from the Ojibwe Indian tribe of North America about the self disconnected from its own soul. Sometimes I go about pitying myself, and all along, my soul is being blown by great winds across the sky. What is the soul? A modern online dictionary writes that the soul is the spiritual part of humans, the emotional part of human nature, and as well, the essential element or part of something. Perennial wisdom describes the human soul as that consciousness that is independent of the ego, not confined to the brain and its complex firing and filtering system. In some places, the soul is readily welcomed. Its deep feelings are applauded on the performance stage of our musicians and artists, in a recording or in a book or movie, a painting, sculpture, and in an architectural masterpiece, where the creative imagination has to be balanced with usability and materialized within the framework of a financial budget and timeline. But what about the everyday workplace, where most souls spend the majority of their days or nights chained to spreadsheets, sales goals, factories or computers, and pressured by endless deadlines? The phrase, "hold a job," applies here, with so many employees that are led more by the fear of failure and losing their job than with the happy challenge of developing self-mastery and increasing skill sets. Now visualize for a minute a workplace where your soul is encouraged to show up and considered an invaluable asset to a company. This imagined business believes in your soul and that its presence will make a huge difference in helping to achieve the company's goals and their outcomes. An individual on a path of self-awareness learns to be more in conscious touch with their soul. They show up with a positive attitude wherever they happen to be and take responsibility for their choices. They imagine more effective and efficient strategies to complete tasks, increase problem-solving abilities, and are more likely to maintain their physical, mental, and emotional health while on the job. They hold a variety of positions, from upper-level ones to a lower but highly valued employee position. Some might own their own business or participate in a partnership. But what is the norm? Most everyone knows of someone, maybe yourself, who complains of a dictatorial and authoritarian boss who pushes their exhausted staff to trudge stoically through the trenches. What we are describing are workplaces around the country where the soul is all but absent. In his forward-looking book, The Heart Aroused, Poetry and Preservation of Soul in Corporate America, the poet David White points out a number of key qualities of a human being who is in touch with their soul. Let's name some of them. Someone who makes regular and conscious contact with their soul has depth, the willingness to go below the surface of things and to see other human beings not as objects to be manipulated or moved about, but as souls engaged in searching for meaningful lives. They also have the capacity to power through rather than maintain power over experience. They witness by their inner stability and poise the value of being over doing. A soulful person brings imaginative decision-making to a group. Rather than anxiously plotting futures, the soul has a tendency just to be in the journey itself. Souls who are in touch with their personalities in the workplace cultivate inner silence and spaciousness. The spacious soul has no need to seek for another's approval, nor do they waste precious time in the gossip mill. Also, a conscious soul courageously names its truth. And lastly, a person who is in regular touch with their soul understands its own and other persons' rhythms, rhythms of high and low energy, the inner cycles of ascending and descending, just like the waxing and waning of the moon. These cycles exist uniquely within every individual, in a family, a group, and within corporations large and small. I mentioned David White's qualities of soul to color in with some detail what we're talking about when we wish to engage in a conversation about soulfulness in the workplace. Another author who speaks to the importance of the soul's connection to work in the world is the writer Parker Palmer. In his book, Let Your Life Speak, he makes a critical point that happiness is acquired when an individual's deepest passion meets the world's deepest need. Let me say that again. Happiness is acquired when an individual's deepest passion meets the world's deepest need. I think for many there is a loss today of where to go in life. Many have misplaced their sense of mission and purpose, uncertain of what they really want and need to do in order to make a positive difference in the world, and to regain a sense of energy and urgency for the work that they do, so that it means something more than just an obligation and duty or getting a paycheck. There is an emerging phenomenon I see today that is a beautiful one, a powerful trend. More and more people are demanding from their work to mean something as well to their soul. We want what we do to have significance. Now, this might sound like a kind of entitlement that says, if I don't get the job I want, I just won't work at all. I'll just collect welfare. Well, at different times of one's life, a job can be just a job, and not necessarily a career, or even deeper, a calling or vocation. Sometimes a person may need to work to survive, to learn a lesson in endurance and patience, and the value that even menial work brings to balance the head and the hands, and teaches the essentials of teamwork. Still, more people are asking themselves, what is the quality of my work life right now? What seems to be trending is a whole different form of planning ways to look within, so as to become inspired by life, as well as a sense of consciousness in planning our future that has more soulful kinds of concerns. Yes, there's a lot of anxiety associated with first finding a job that pays enough for yourself and for your family if you happen to have dependents. But as soon as you get a little money in your pocket and start feeling better about yourself and your prospects, a light comes on one day. You look around and you might say to yourself, wow, there are some weird dynamics going on around me. Am I the one that's crazy? Or are there a lot of these folks around me? Are they unconscious and asleep, playing out these family of origin narratives? I mean, you notice a coworker who is grumpy and whining. Another is fearful of losing their job they hate. This is an important moment when you first become aware of yourself and others within your external environment, and seeing them not with the eyes of ego judgment, but with the laser lens of soul discernment. It goes without saying that it is wise to not judge lest you be judged. However, if you are awakening to your soul, it is high time you learn to discern, that is, to see beneath the veneer of the unrest, unfulfillment, and unhappiness in the world around you, and maybe even within yourself, or discerning another person's fulfillment and happiness, and that being at peace with themselves, but you see it. So when you judge, you're basically coloring from your own limited perspective, seeing another person's outsides from your insides, especially if they happen to be real gloomy, judging through filters. But discerning has much more about seeing from the perspective of the soul. It is more about a clear picture of things. within yourself and around you. So, there are people in your immediate circle who might also be awakening. It's amazing how fast people are growing individually. That is, becoming soulfully self-aware and as well discerning of others. I've discovered in my work with individuals, couples, and families over the years that there are more and more who are really doing wonderful work of getting conscious, healing from their childhood traumas, and evolving. This might mean growing apart from certain family members or friends, and then perhaps weaving back together at a later stage of one's life. We don't know when the last chapter or the next chapter will be written on any relationship, if we stay open to the possibility that at any moment a person can awaken to soulful purpose, and that purpose may or may not include us. I mention family because whenever one goes into the workplace or the corporate structure, or say any institution, one finds the same things being acted out that were or still are being acted out in the family of origin. The difference is that many are required to be at work 8, sometimes 12 hours a day, 5 or 6 days a week, unless one is working part-time, of course. But who spends that much time with their family, friends, and even loved ones? So to find your soul at work is so critical, so necessary, because that's where most of us spend most of our time. And that includes at-home moms or at-home dads. Often they are responsible for the household, for children, even carrying a part-time job and having a home office. So it doesn't really matter. The workplace is wherever the workplace is. It can be at home or outside the home. But the important thing is, if we are not discovering and bringing our soul into that experience, we're simply not going to be fulfilled and we'll be going and going and going and burning out before you know it. So, and there's always the entrepreneurial path that a person might take. But not everyone is suited to strike out on their own. And that might entail even more hours in the day and night spent in trying to launch a startup business. The point is that there are a lot of hours, a lot of time that most families are spending, mothers and fathers, single moms, single dads, single men and single women who are putting all of their life into a place where they're making money and oftentimes unmaking their soul. I meet a lot of people also stuck in mid-management positions, and they stay in the institution because they're afraid of getting out because all they see is the hope of a pension and a substantial retirement. Unless you're the happy recipient of a trust fund, those who stay fettered to the chains of fear will also burn out in the slow and steady flames of resentment and regret. That stuck in the negative emotional state, of course, will have dire consequences. Getting mired in negativity is different than assessing a negative mood or objectively observing a challenging situation we find ourselves in. Sensing negativity within ourselves or around us is necessary and useful information that requires a soulful response. However, when our personality becomes disengaged from its soul, it is more easily caught in the net of negativity and can even drown in its dark, tepid waters. The soul is chained by the unconscious and stubborn ego, but the soul is set free by the personality that would hearken to its wisdom. Sometimes folks hear a lot in those who are working for companies, the CEO coming out and saying, "We've got to raise the morale around here." And that stressed out upper-level management person announces to her second or third in command, "Middle management is ordered to help the lower echelons of workers, thinking they can build their morale by letting them dump and talk." But often that's where the understanding ends, and many are too scared to really air their true concerns when asked. Disconnected from their soul, they wimp out and say nothing. Going along is getting along, and maybe I won't be told to move along. Nothing is really achieved by venting without insight and corrective and creative solutions. Here's another symptom of the loss of soul in the workplace. A corporation in trouble and not knowing how to engage positively in reforming and reshaping itself, from the perspective of soul, can become authoritarian and rigid, penalizes individualism, and suppresses the need, the needed innovation that can be achieved through the imagination of soulful brainstorming with the heart at its center. In the book Messy, Tim Harford writes about the genius of the horn player Miles Davis. Improvising musicians shut down their inner critics to allow the mess of new ideas to flow out. Improvising unleashes creativity. It feels fresh and honest and personal. Above all, it turns a monologue into a conversation. What happens in the last gasps of soul repression in the corporate structure is that if anyone desires to innovate or to creatively imagine or bring to the table ideas and want to be empowered in order to do that effectively, there can often be a kind of silent pushing down and suppression where the no-talk rule is you better get with the pack or you're out. But the soul knows that the only way out is the way in. In learning about the soul, in learning about the soul's relationship with the world, in learning to cultivate your very own self as an innovator and co-creator of your universe is the business of your soul. You can start in small ways. You might take up playing an instrument or a new sport, throwing a few clay plates on a potter's wheel, or splash some colorful paints on a canvas. Obviously, you're not going to be able to do this at work for the most part, but I mean, you have to do it somewhere. So you do it in a place where you feel safe to get the juices flowing, huh? You can keep a journal of daydreams and night dreams. Take the old record of your boring mental tapes off the turntable for a minute and breathe into your life by maybe even practicing one of the yogas. Whatever you do, begin creating, innovating, and let acceptance, play, and non-judgment become an integral part of your life. Carl Jung once said, "For a man and woman to really do spontaneity would mean to really be connected to the creative process, because the universe is in process of being created." Yes, right now, right now. What is implied here is that we have choices. We can be creators, collaborators, learners from masters of creativity, part of a team of manifested product we believe in. There are many options to engage in this creative process. The key is awakening to what is going on around you and within you, and to become a participator in this creative process and not just a cog in some machine we don't believe in. Now, of course, not everyone are leaders. There will always be leaders and followers. What is important is to be conscious and self-empowered, advises the leadership guru Barbara Kellerman, who teaches at Harvard's Business School. And she has a book about leaders and followers. And I love how she talks about the key is to just own what your position, own what you are, who you are, what your role is, and step into it, and step into a positive way, not a negative way. The way out is the way in, and the way in is the way out. The way out is really to recover the soul. That's the way in. The way in, to recover the soul. A sure sign that we have achieved soul tethering is a sense of radical self-acceptance. In the 12th century, one of the perennial masters of soul, Meister Eckhart, wrote that compassion begins at home with one's own body and one's own soul. Another sign of soul connection is to grow in acceptance of your circumstances as they are, of different points of view. Acceptance that every person we encounter will be at a particular stage of awakening, regardless of their age or social station. Don't judge. Discern. Judging can often be negative, and all it does is drain your brain power and your soul power. But to discern is something else, and discernment is just taking a look and seeing, without judgment, discerning what the situation is, where someone is and what they need, where the lights are on, the lights are off. Take a look. Look at someone with the eyes of your soul. Some of our children may very well be ahead in their soul training. Your awakening to soul is your own business, and another person's awakening to soul is theirs. All happens in its own time, and the readiness for your next step in your conscious evolution is really all you need to attend to. A conscious soul does its best to search for the unity, not uniformity, but harmony between the 10,000 things voicing their souls in a symphony of rich tones and vibrations around you, your children, your partners, your mother, your father, your extended family, your friends, your business relationships, your lovers, etc. Find your soul, and you have found your note. And that note is playing, and it's moving, it's ascending, descending. It's a song, and your song and your place in the grand orchestra of soulful longing is striving toward its infinite potential of becoming one with the source. Your soul's destiny, your individual consciousness, is to learn to play its body and brain like a precious instrument, to hear its music as it establishes resonance and harmony with the grand orchestra, is to achieve one of the highest states of being human, I believe, to become one with the huge symphony of all the instruments that are playing and creating the divine opus, the great work of art that is this magnificent awakening, the awakening of our souls. It's meant to become a great work of art. The soul knows that art is more than the subjective expression in some material form of a particular way one sees the universe. It's not only a playing out of our neuroses. Art for the soul is the very creation of the universe happening right now. Lastly, art is really the business of the soul. And the business of the soul is to become a great work of art, your work of art, not comparing to anyone else's. Great art is the ongoing unfoldment of internal beauty, outward and into the world of form. For the soul-aware individual, work is serious play, and play is joyful work. A conscious soul recognizes that there is no time, only opportunities to learn and to master the art of being in a body with grace and poise as we go. Just learning, learning. We fall, we're going to have those moments of the rising and descending of our life. We're going to have those moments where we shouldn't even move around so much, and those moments where we're really moving forward in life. The point is to do even that with grace and poise. If we injure ourselves, that means then restore yourself, restore your body, your heart, and your soul with grace and poise, not impatience and frustration. Turn all your body and brain's natural gifts into serving the needs of the world and transforming your body and your brain's liabilities into assets. The great masters were about this always. Wasn't about, you know, not having liabilities, looking at those liabilities and how to transform those into assets. That asset might even be something like humility or seeing a sense of limits or understanding that right now I can't do this, but tomorrow I can. Doing our best in any given day, as Miguel Ruiz in the Four Agreements talks about. It is our soul that knows that it is not about turning a bad situation into a good one. It is already knowing that every situation is neither good nor bad. It is only an opportunity to engage artfully with what we are presented, as if our internal guide was right there next to us saying, okay, you're going to really like this challenge of testing and building your internal muscle. Okay, open your heart. But my heart's been broken and wounded, you say. No, it hasn't. That's a trip your mind has laid on your heart, because it didn't get what it wanted or what it thought was coming to it. Your mind and your will might be broken and wounded, but not your heart. Your heart is the seat of your soul. It's where your soul lives. It's the home of your soul. Now, the heart does need to be stretched and expanded so that it can contain more and still more love. A good way it does that is through longing and surrender and a big yes and convincing the brain to let go of its attachments through love. Longing, missing someone, and the thwarting of our desire, not being able to get what we want now, but sitting in that pain, in that absence with full acceptance and releasing someone whom we love, releasing them to their life, even if it is without us. Sometimes we have to do that. And it can only be authentically achieved if we have this heartfelt soulfulness. Our internal coach might continue and say, okay, you can do it. Open your heart to consciously tether your body to your soul. Now, don't forget what I've told you time and time again. Your heart is where your soul lives, not in your brain, but in your heart. Take the energy of your soul and go out into your world. In every interaction, think, speak, and do from the perspective of your soul, from your individual consciousness, your higher consciousness. And know that you are being guided, protected, and helped by your soul, and as well by your soul's inner teacher. It goes deeper and deeper and deeper. Our teacher we have is our soul, and our soul has a teacher, the inner teacher, the Purusha, the ancients speak of. Stay tethered to your soul, and that is your link to your inmost self, to infinite consciousness. Listen to your soul's wisdom. Answer only to your soul's call. All will be well, even if things right now don't seem like it or appear to be. If you look at a situation with the eyes of your soul, you will see the bigger picture. You will have clarity. And you will also know how to deal with the small picture. I know you can do this. You can bring your soul not only to the workplace, but also bring your soul to every place. Okay, ready, set, be. Be here. Be here now.
Perception were cleansed, every feeling would appear to men as it is. Himself up till he